Aha. Turns out. Smulovitz Duo. It's voice and laptop. Three floors of sound. Echoing through the Vancouver Art Gallery. I find myself in the middle of the How Soon Is Now exhibit in one of the large open rooms. And there is a player in this room. There's lots of people in here as well. And a bunch of different artworks. One is discs of metal all over the walls that you can walk up to, and they're convex. You can see the whole room in each one of them. And I'm walking up to one now and I see hundreds of people behind me. But it's a wonderful, wonderful event, this Fuse. Very different. People, watching art, listening to art. It's a good time. We're joined by an opera singer and the trumpet player. Clarinet has joined the mix.
The Chick at the Back of the Church by Billy Livingston. Bet you could pick up anything because you got seven fingers on your right hand and you don't waste a single one. I read a wall said you rub yourself to blisters and back of here soak nipples in red wine and give communion. I like you like that, fearless bitch, meet your maker with your hands in your pants. Can't help looking back through sermons at those lips swollen like they've been slapped. I think that's how you get them all, like how mama birds play wrecked for cats. Everyone loves a victim. Bet you stuff smiles in their mouths, suck voices from their groins, lick wires through their eyes so they stay closed. God help a piece that stares. I'm going to light my jaws tonight so you'll see me talking, click my knees like ruby shoes and find an empty pew. I'll lie back there on varnished oak and quiet me counting beads.
She told me to stay or go away, and I looked in her and laughter.
Good evening. You're listening to Audio Text on CITR 101.9. This is the show about Canadian literature that CBC would never play. I'm Julie Peters, and I'm here with my tech, occasional co-host, occasional voice, Eric Drews. And we have an exciting show for you today. We're doing a sisterhood-themed show. Sisterhood is a festival that's going on over the month of March in conjunction with International Women's Day, which is March 8th. So we're going to have a lot of stuff going on with some really talented ladies, including Billy Livingston, who you heard at the beginning of the show, and who I'm going to be returning back to in 25 minutes or so. Before we get to all that, though, some listings for you, some events happening in this beautiful city of Vancouver. Lots of stuff tonight, lots of choice. First of all, today is Wednesday, March 4th. The Spilius Speak and Sing happens once a month, and that's at the Cottage Bistro starting at 8 p.m. It's sort of an open mic, and there are a few planned things that are happening, including the feature tonight, which is Warren Dean Fulton. So go and check that out at the Cottage Bistro at 8 p.m. Happening tonight at 7 p.m., How to Read World Literature. It's a lecture with Dr. David Damrosch, and that's going to be at the library, the Vancouver Public Library, at the Alma Van Dusen and Peter McKay room. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing to complement a lot of the stuff that you're going to, that when you go to see literature and poetry readings and stuff like that, it's great, but it's nice to see a lecture that talks about how to read that stuff, how to understand it, and some of the theory behind it, which can be really interesting. Also tonight, 7 to 9 p.m., Dare to be Heard, which is an open mic for writers to discuss their work with other writers, and that's happening at the Molly Nye House, which is in North Vancouver, 950 Lynn Valley Road. If that's a little too short notice for you, also tomorrow morning, Thursday, March 5th at 11:30 a.m., Roy Mickey, who is an award-winning author, is going to be reading at Capilano University Library, also in North Vancouver, which is 2055 Purcell Way. Coming up on Sunday, another event that happens every month, it's the Vancouver Story Slam. Actually happens twice a month, I think. That's 8 p.m. at Café du Soleil, the Vancouver Story Slam. Kind of like the Poetry Slam, but something a little different. Different crowd. That's $5. Go and check that out for something a little different. So as I said, the Sisterhood Festival is happening this month. It's really exciting. There are 16 different events happening over the entire month, including music, storytelling, poetry, spoken word, line dancing. There's all kinds of crazy stuff happening. Some of those artists include the musician Zaki Ibrahim and the theater performer Debbie Young, who you might have heard of. She's been touring Canada and making big waves with her one-woman show, and the blues cellist Monica McIntyre. The theme for this month is future ancestors, so if you're interested in that stuff, and there's a lot to be interested in, go to www.sisterhoodcelebration.com. One of the people who's going to be involved in the Sisterhood celebration is Naomi Steinberg. She is a storyteller who we had on the show just a couple of weeks ago. She was talking about the International Story Festival, the Vancouver International Storytelling Festival. And that day I actually had a story by her that the computer took away from me cruelly, and I've managed to recover it. So I'm going to play that for you today. She's going to be involved in Nadia Cheney's play, Myrtle Silverspot, Kitchen Confidential, which we're going to have an interview about in just a few minutes. So all of these things do connect together, just trust me. So coming up next, an excerpt from Naomi Steinberg.
On May 12, 2009, British Columbians will again be voting on whether to adopt the new voting system recommended by the BC Citizens Assembly on Electoral Reform, BCSTV. BCSTV is a more representative system in which elected representatives accurately reflect and are accountable to the will of voters. If you're interested in helping the campaign to bring fairer voting to BC, you can email us at fairvoteubc@gmail.com or visit the campaign website for more information at stv.ca. A message from the UBC Fair Vote Club.
Okay, Naomi, I'm so sorry. There's something cursed about that story, I think. This is the second time I've tried to play it on the air, and mysterious computer problems have been preventing it. Mercury is no longer in retrograde, but we're still having these technical problems, so I apologize for that. We'll try to get it up by the end of the show, but in the meantime, we're going to go straight to that interview with Nadia Cheney.
Oh!
We've recovered it. It's back. Naomi Steinberg coming up next.
Israel and Palestine 3 years ago on a story collecting journey. And while I was there, I met a lot of really amazing people and got to open my heart and open my ears and just be filled up with so much hope and possibility despite all odds. It's been weighing a bit heavy on my heart what's happening to my family and friends over there. So I thought I'd share with you one of the stories that I learned while I was there. A woman named Mariam Abu Regaik, quite a powerful and fantastic Bedouin woman living in the Negev desert. She shared with me some of her wisdom. And one of the stories that she told me was about a man who dispensed great advice. Anybody who followed this man's advice was sure to prosper. They would find happiness, they would find money, they would find their lady, you know, or their man, whatever they wanted. They followed the advice, it came to them. Now, when this man was on his deathbed, he called his son to him, and he said, "Son, I want to give you my best piece of advice." And the son was quite happy, so he opened his ears to listen. "My son," said the old man, "here is my advice. You should only eat sweet, you should only sleep on silk, and everywhere you go, build a home." And then he died. And the young man grieved, and then he proceeded to follow his father's advice. He only ate sweets, he only slept on silk, and everywhere he went, he built himself a house. Now, after some time, this young man grew so skinny because he could only eat sweets, and before long, just the mere sight of baklava made him feel like throwing up. And his pockets were empty because silk is expensive and building a house costs materials. So he was confused because he was further from his dreams than he'd ever been before, and he just didn't understand. This was his father's best piece of advice. What was this? So he called his father's best friend and he said, "I don't know what to do. I have no money, I can't eat, I'm sick, I feel like I'm dying, and I'm following my father's advice. Can you help me?" So his father's best friend said, "Well, tell me, what was your father's advice?" And the young man said, "Well, my father told me to only eat sweet, only sleep on silk, and everywhere I go, I should build a house. Now look at me, I am miserable. What should I do?" And the friend smiled and said, "You misunderstood your father's advice. This is the real advice. You should only eat when you're so hungry that everything tastes sweet. You should only sleep when you're so tired that everywhere feels like a silken bed. And everywhere you go, make friends. Their house is your home."
Okay, well, musical accompaniment on that piece was by Obi Wonder. All right, everyone, we've had some technical difficulties today. They've been cleared up. It's a computer problem. We have a new computer. It's not totally my fault this time. However, you can still blame me if you'd like to. Anyway, next up, we have, is this a poem or?
Interview.
This is an interview with Nadia Cheney, who's a poet and recently playwright and novelist, whose play called Myrtle Silver Spot, Kitchen Confidential, which is about a matrilineal family that discovers there's been a global food system crash. This play will be closing off the Sisterhood Festival on March 31st. Doors are at 7:30. Show is at 8. And it's at the Anza Club. Tickets are $15. Here's the interview that Julie did.
All right, so I'm sitting here with Nadia Chaney, and we're going to be talking a little bit about her upcoming play, which is called Myrtle Silverspot, Kitchen Confidential, for the Sisterhood Festival, which is just about to kick off. So first of all, thanks so much, Nadia, for talking to us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Julie. Thanks a lot.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about this play? What inspired it? What's it all about?
Well, Myrtle Silverspot is... It was inspired by the name, actually, A Kitchen Confidential. That's what the festival director gave me to work with. And, you know, it came out of conversations in a kitchen at Gravely Towers. And it's about a food systems crash. It's about the day that a family of women, a very kind of odd, creative family, realize that there's no more food coming into the city. And it's just a slice in that sense. So it's only really that day and the next day. And it doesn't, the play, although it offers a possible mode for a solution, it's not about solutions and it's not about the problems really. It's more about the moment and the relationships and what is going on for each of these really different kinds of people when the realization hits them. And what I did was I wrote a 25-minute piece, and then I invited these great artists that I know to come and write pieces on them, choreograph dances on. They're all actors, but they also either they're also a storyteller, also a dancer, also a poet, and then to write pieces on themselves to add to the script. So the script, it's not, yeah, the best way I could describe it would be like a musical, but it's more subtle than that, the way that they break out and break back into the script. So the 25-minute, let's say, moment, and the three acts get expanded into this collaborative multimedia thing, which is actually a space I'm a lot more comfortable in. You know, that's what I really love, is when art becomes that blossoming sort of collaboration.
And so what did you find different about this process in terms of both how it affected you as a writer and also what happened to the content? Was that sort of did something different happen when you were writing the play as opposed to a poem?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so different. And actually, I can't compare it to writing a poem at all, but I can compare it to writing the novel, where it was like I worked those characters and massaged them until they finally could speak for themselves, and then I had to, like, push the plot, and it was really an act of muscular kind of act. Whereas writing the play, it was like it just slid out, you know. It was like I was watching it and then I just recorded what I watched, but it was still flat. And it was when the actors came that we started to be able to dig. Like, I knew what their immediate motivations were, but the actors brought their stories and they brought their connections to each other. It was when they started to touch each other and to, like, move around in the space that the writing got its life. And so it's actually, like, you know, the eighth draft in, four of them were done after the process started. So it's a totally different beast, you know. The characters themselves are totally different because they exist in this other space. They don't only exist in my mind and then the reader eventually. This is like, and especially because I'm directing it too, it's like this rocking sort of silvery, like, unintelligible place. It's like a real person, you know, rather than the kind of ghostliness that my novel characters have. It's really different. I'm really enjoying it. It's like magic, right? And every rehearsal, like these 4-hour rehearsals, you feel the characters almost till you can touch them, and then it's weird when the actors take them off, you know. And I haven't been part of that before. I'm really enjoying it.
Great. So this play is capping off the Sisterhood Festival at the very end. It's on March 31st. So how do you think it fits into the Sisterhood Festival as a whole?
Well, there's twofold. One, last year we did a piece called Two Sisters, and it was the collaboration piece. And then, so Myrtle Silverspot is the continuation of that. And I think that, in effect, is, for me, a lot of what the Sisterhood Festival is about: collaboration and bringing the most diverse kind of artists together from all over the place and a whole month, you know? And so all these genres and formats. So in that sense. But then also, in terms of the theme itself, Myrtle Silverspot is really focused on this theme of future ancestors. And within the play, that's what it's really about, is like, how are these people using their... What is located in the moment of this crash, you know? And what do they have to reach out forward and backwards to be able to stay together, just to hold it together? And so... I think for me, a lot of what Future Ancestors is about is like what we're leaving and what we inherited. And that's really the crux of Myrtle Silver Spot. I won't give it away if I tell you. It's like, it's really about how do we take the specialist mentality and apply it to a really complex system that's failing? And what is a thin doorway that we'll sneak through, you know, and that our children will get through? And what were the intentions of the true intentions of our ancestors? And how can we follow them to a place where the earth is healthy again? You know?
So it seems like a really important thing about both the play and the festival is this idea of collaboration, sisterhood. So who is collaborating in this play? What kind of stuff is going to be involved in this performance?
Okay, so there's Naomi Steinberg, and she is a storyteller, and so she's our like wisdom character, our crucial sort of injection. And then there's Namchi Bazar, and she's also a dancer, she's a dancer, and she's a Bharat Natyam dancer. And I wish that I could tell you right now the name of her studio, but she's a wonderful teacher, and if people are looking for a dance teacher, she's amazing. And then there's Mucha Makatumpag, and she'll be doing, she's a singer-songwriter and a dancer, and she'll be dancing in the piece. And she's got this like really kind of hip-hop, like edgy, she's busy, you know, she's that person who's like so busy that it hits her really hard, and it hits her right where it hurts, that things are going to stop. And then she has a sister, and that's Jenny Craig. And Jenny's a theater and English major at UBC. And she is playing the scientist sister. And then Zinnia Clark is playing the mother, who's this wacky mother. Like, she's growing a hydroponic garden in her kitchen. And then Charlene Seo is the poet. And so she's bringing the really political piece of... So this happens to this family, but there's the people who work for them. And Charlene's playing one of those characters. It's a really, really strong character, and she'll be doing a piece of slam poetry in the play. Then we have Alison Roy making the music, the entire score. And the score will be very layered as we try to create the urban landscape and the sense and also the emotional landscape. And so she'll be playing live cello and also recording digital music. And then there's Suez Holland, who's Suez Holland and the only man in our crew, whose name is Paul Hendricks, will be doing the lights. And the lights are not just the lights on the actor, but it's also, we'll have a very sparse stage, and the lights will create the environment. So we'll have a couple of video screens, and they'll be playing video, which is also how Two Sisters was, as the show goes on, you know, they'll be highlighting other parts of the world and other things that are going on as it happens. And then Anna Hillier is the stage manager, and her mother is going to help us with costumes, who's Molly Hillier. And I think that's everybody. Oh, I hope it's everybody. I really hope it is.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a big group.
Great, well, the show sounds amazing. And the festival sounds amazing. And what else do you think that you're going to be checking out yourself for that?
Well, I'll definitely be at The Remedy, which is a whole day of events, but also like really practical ways that people can, as it's called The Remedy, ways that people can get together, how to make seed bombs and how to, you know, square foot gardening and all that kind of stuff will be there. And also all kinds of organizations that help to bring Vancouver together. So I'll be there for sure. The film festival, which is awesome. It's all about women and crime. And there's a lot of really new formats within it. So there'll be like re-edits of films of women and crime, like Thelma and Louise. And that should be really, really good. And then the cabaret is always amazing. And Amber Dawn is coordinating it again. And then I know that Debbie Young is going to be here, so I won't miss her. I can't remember exactly where she's going to be. I won't miss Aura's show. I mean, the problem with sisterhood is that you can't do everything, but it's definitely worth a try if you can.
For sure.
You know? And Zaki. Ibrahim. I won't miss that either.
Just take the whole month and go see everything you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. For sure. So for our listeners who want to get more information about you, about the play, about what you do, where should they go?
Go to buyanydreamsnecessary.com.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks so much for talking to us about the Sisterhood Festival and about your play today, Nadia.
Thank you, Julie.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. Remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What is Pilate? He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Nightwatch Show on Junior!
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
All right, so coming up next, we're going to have a recording of Lisa Slater. She is one of the spoken word poets who are going to be involved in the Sisterhood-themed slam this coming Monday, March 9th, starting around 8 p.m. She is just a Vancouver spoken word poet. She's been around the slam for a while, and she does some really interesting stuff, so she'll be a great one. You can hear a taste of it today and come back and listen to what else she's got to slam with on Monday. There are going to be a bunch of really good artists there, actually including myself, Julie Peters. I will be there competing in that slam, so that in itself is a reason to go. And if you've been curious about what my poetry is all about listening to the show, you can come and check it out then. Some of the others are going to be Sasha Langford, Magpie Ulysses, Shannon Rain, Lucia Mish, Nora Smith-Heisler, and Sue McIntyre. So these are all poets that have been around the city. They're all really wonderful. I've found that in the past when these events happen, the women come and they bring it. It's really incredible. It's like no slam you've ever seen. So I really recommend coming to that Monday, March 9th. At Café du Soleil, which is Commercial Drive and 5th, around 8 p.m. Get there early because I assume it'll fill up fast. And just to entice you a little bit further, here's Lisa Slater.
Having a nervous breakdown. A how-to guide. First, let someone matter to you. When she tells you she loves you, cry. Then yell. Call your mom. Yell at her too. After you cannot open the fridge. Finish a bottle of Australian Chardonnay, a block of cheese, and a roll of pills very quickly. Go for a walk. Your quick devil with the rest on the edge of the bathtub. Ignore the ringing phone. It's probably your mother. Why you're late. Get nervous and spill coffee all over your shirt. Swear. Apologize on the way home. Call the ex-boyfriend you never got over and ask him if he'd like to get a drink later. Wear something robust and too much eyeliner. When he asks you how your new girlfriend is, fuck him. Come hard against his fingers in the men's room. Go home before he sees you cry. In the morning, tell the bread to go fuck itself. Let up the flesh of your dignity and then call in sick to work. Text your girlfriend to tell her that you're sorry and you miss her. Facebook chat your ex. Thanks for last night. And then I'm
was so wrapped up just then talking about myself that I forgot to mention the feature for the Sisterhood Slam. That's going to be Jean Ann Verlee. She's a poet, prose writer, actor, activist, and former punk rocker from New York City. So she'll be an interesting one to check out as well. So we're coming to the end of our show, but we're going to have a little bit of extra time this week, so I'm going to be reading a little bit of more of that poetry by Billy Livingston. This poet I find really interesting. My mom gave me this book of poetry, actually. She said, Julie, you should really check this out. I sort of rolled my eyes and thought, okay, Mom, whatever. she read a novel for her book club, and so I wasn't totally sure what to expect from the book. And further complicating my expectations was the physical book itself. First of all, I read the blurb on the back, and it says, one of Canada's most exciting new writers, and that's never a good sign. So I kind of thought, well, you know, one of Canada's most exciting new writers, that's such a vague kind of term. Secondly, I found the book itself, the cover, kind of ugly. It looks like somebody just photoshopped it. And it kind of makes the title of the collection, which is The Chick at the Back of the Church, look kind of cheesy as opposed to clever and edgy. It's just a picture of a woman in the shadows of a church in this kind of ugly font, and the whole thing is black. And, you know, no offense to Knightwood Editions, but it wasn't very enticing for me. So, but of course, this was one of those situations of not judging a book by its cover, or of course I wouldn't be reading this on the radio. I started reading it and I thought, wow, this is actually really amazing. She is edgy. Words like brash are used to describe her. And sure enough, she is. Usually that's another bad sign. It means that the person is kind of trying to use a lot of shock value and relying on sort of the showiness of the poems to make it good. And that's not to say that I think poetry should be really, that kind of poetry is simplistic or obvious, or it hit people over the heads with a political point of the story, but it takes skill to talk about interesting and sometimes difficult topics with grace, subtlety, and accessibility. It's a really hard balance, and I think that, in my opinion, Billy Livingston does that. But of course, I'll let you be the judge. So I'm going to read a few poems now from Billy Livingston's collection, The Chick at the Back of the Church, published by Knightwood Editions. Don't let the cover dissuade you from buying it. There are things I'd rather do. Did you know that exactly 4:11 a.m. a train passes through our yard, or maybe just its hoarse wail? Then again, you wouldn't. You weren't here to catch the 5:54 either. At 6:01, I'd have slapped your sorry face. 6:17, I had plans to sit in your lap, knock out your teeth with dirty words. But here it is, 7:27, and my silence, stuffed like a white rag in your mouth, has an ugly poetry all its own. Don't think I enjoy this, watching you tied to your chair by a single nerve. There are things I'd rather do than view an infidel. And if you were smart enough to lie a good lie, I wouldn't have to. I could peel off your guilt and eat you like fruit. My version. First warm night that spring, college kids outside Future's Bakery drinking coffee, wearing Gap sweaters, cars gridlocked down Bloor. You and me ambling behind, legs slack off bikes till we heard them chasing through bumpers. Her with bleach-teased hair, denim mini skirt, yelling, "Let me go!" to the guy stuck on her wrist. The guy in cement-battered Oxfords, a man-sized blazer on a skinny student body, voice hoarse, "Just give me my money," running right past our front wheels, and you beside me as she made it to the curb. A voice from the crowd screamed, "Let her go!" She squeezed like greased cat through his grip, yowled, "Let me alone," and turned on him. He showed his reasoning palms. "I just want my $50 back." She shifted hip to hip. "No, I gave you your blowjob." And every eyeball on the street jigged raw. "No, you didn't. You're a hooker and a thief," he hollered as the cruiser pulled up. "This'll be a toughie," I said to the cop striding past our wheels. You slumped beside me, wringing the handlebars. "You don't want to watch this, do you?" And my rubber-necked guilt said, "No, but I was dying to watch, dying to." Laughing out loud when we met our friends for coffee, I asked them, "What do you think they did, dust for sperm?" You shook your head, told me I was numb and wrong. It was sad and disgusting. For the last time, you told me that. So you see, that's the night we broke up. The night I slept with Charles. Back when Bukowski claimed to be alive, I read his work till I wanted to vomit, the way he always woke up doing. Seasick of him, I passed out, dreamed bearded, ugly, smash-faced dreams. Bukowski ambling into my bedroom, me wondering, should I tell him how bad his stuff is? Dream Charles had no use for talk, climbed me like a beanstalk, felled me and slipped inside. Him there on top, which I wouldn't normally allow. My eyes ran right to left, left to right, too much, too close, like the front row seat in a movie house. Lumberjack chest, shoulders, gnarled old man skin, he covered me like the pea in a shell game. He must be good at this, I thought, he does it enough. I wrapped my arms round his leather neck, watched them change color. Floating under his barrel body, my arms dazzled royal blue to Spanish red, poster paper yellow. I'm a chameleon, I dreamed, I'm a freak. He'll write bad poetry about this. Maybe that's how he gets laid so much, so ugly, everyone he screws turns color. I wandered Queen Street all next day, feeling that grizzled man still inside me, minding my arms till it was night and time for work. Unable to stop my mouth, I told the bartender, lender of the Bukowski book, what I'd lived through in sleep. He tossed bar scoop to ice. You did not. I did so. It was sickening. He glared some. Bukowski died last night, died in his sleep, he said. You fucked him to death. I tied my apron strings, counted my float, then smoothing his dog-eared cover, set Bukowski on the bar. When she chewed gum. Sometimes when I chew gum, I remember my mother when I was 7 or 8. Single, sexy, wearing hot pants, deeply upsetting the neighbors. She drank only beer or wine in bars to be sure she got her money's worth. Drank from coffee mugs at home in case company should arrive unexpectedly. She chewed gum slowly, artfully, not like a camel like some women. Even at 8, I knew when she chewed gum it was sex, raw, uncompromising. And whoever dared near the lair was made fully aware I needed new runners and the fridge could use some fattening. Then weeks later, when the phone would ring, I liked to chew gum and smile at my mother as I told them, she's not home and I don't know when she's coming back. So that was a short selection of Billy Livingston's poems from her collection, The Chick at the Back of the Church. I especially like that Bukowski poem because I was trying to read some Bukowski recently and found it really bad and made me want to vomit because it was so bad. And that's a bit of a weird position to take because Bukowski is a bit of a cult figure. I can get into that another time, though. We're at the end of our time here. So if you have any questions, comments, feedback, love letters, hate letters, please send them to audiotextcitr@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you, and we'll be speaking to you next week.
Thank you.